I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, September 17th, 2018. I'm Dave Anthony. If Democrats take back control of the House, some want to impeach President Trump.
I think impeachment is hell, and it's madness to go through it because it requires a two-thirds majority, rightly and wisely so, in the Senate to remove.
I'm Eric Schon. It is called the silent killer, brain aneurysms. September is Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. What are they? What should you look for? You could save a life.
There's no time to prepare. There's no time to say goodbye.
And I'm Kat Timm. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
His supporters call it a witch hunt, a partisan investigation trying to take out the president of the United States, led by someone who should never have been appointed but should resign. Of course, I'm talking about President Clinton.
It's nobody's business but ours. Even presidents have private lives.
20 years before the special counsel's Russia probe, President Bill Clinton used to deride Ken Starr's investigation as a witch hunt. He was the Robert Mueller of his day, an independent counsel whose Whitewater investigation evolved into a sex scandal.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false.
That was in January of 1998. But by August, after Monica Lewinsky got immunity and detailed her sexual encounters in the White House and handed over that infamously stained blue dress, the president admitted publicly,
"Indeed, I did have a relationship with Miss Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong."
But he claimed he testified under oath truthfully, at the same time admitting,
"I misled people, including even my wife. I deeply regret that."
But the independent counsel believed the president committed perjury and obstruction of justice and handed over the Starr report to Congress, which included all the juicy details about the Lewinsky affair. The Republican-led House of Representatives voted to impeach, but President Clinton was acquitted in the Senate in February of 1999, with some in the GOP joining Democrats clearing him. Over the next 3 days, we will talk to Ken Starr, who's also a former judge. He has a new book, Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation. In it, Starr writes, he was never disappointed that Clinton was not convicted and removed from office.
Not in the least. First of all, just to make the legal point, I did my job, which is here's the information we've gathered. We've assessed the information. Here is the referral. I think that a lesson that we've learned, and it has echoes today, don't go there. The American people want stability. We believe in elections, and we don't want Russian interference with those elections or anyone else to interfere. We want honest elections, but we want elections. We've got a midterm election coming up. That's going to be a referendum on President Trump. That's the way it should be. But not to have individuals who are not elected by the nation saying we're going to overturn an election. Now, I'm obviously not taking the extreme position that never to impeachment. But our history tells us, and beginning with Andrew Johnson, who came very close to losing the presidency given his woeful lack of popularity at the time and his somewhat phlegmatic personality, Americans then and Americans now do not want the president turned out of office, no matter how unpopular he is. Now, we came close with Richard Nixon, but he was proven to have engaged in a crime, obstruction of justice, that the nation took seriously then. We are so glued to stability, and of course President Clinton was reasonably popular, then became wildly popular, because impeachment was viewed with such horror by the electorate as a whole. Obviously, 31 Democrats supported impeachment. So
And partisan Republicans were supportive, of course.
Exactly. But 31 Democrats rallied around out of conscience to say, no, I think he's got to answer these crimes to in the bar of justice in the Senate. But happily, the Constitution provides, and this is why I think impeachment is hell, and it's madness to go through it because it requires a two-thirds majority, rightly and wisely so, in the Senate to remove. Only a majority vote, right, in the House of Representatives. So if the Democrats get control of the House of Representatives, then Maxine Waters can say it's impeachment time. But don't go there. It's just going to divide the nation. And I think that's one of the lessons that I try to convey in contempt for the current scene.
Now, it all began years earlier. Starr was sworn in as independent counsel in August 1994, investigating Whitewater. And at the time, he figured it would take about 6 months. He was wrong.
It was not simply Whitewater, the land deal in beautiful north central Arkansas. It was Webster Hubbell's fraudulent billings. He was the Associate Attorney General of the United States. It was the death of Vincent Foster Jr., Hillary's law partner.
A suicide.
Ledrock. And on and on it went. There was even an investigation into Governor Clinton's 1990 state gubernatorial campaign finance violations, which sounds familiar these days. So there were various and sundry streams, not just, hey, there was a failed land deal in Arkansas. Here's Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan. Was there fraud, et cetera? There was. And
you got convictions in this case.
We did. And thank you, Dave, for mentioning that, because it's very important in terms of the historical record. And I go again into detail in describing the real reality of what went on in Arkansas. 14 criminal convictions, including the sitting governor of the state, including the president and Hillary's partners, business partners, and of course Hillary's client, Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan, owned by Jim and Susan McDougal.
But at the time, the Clintons were tied to everything, but they were difficult to get around it, right? I mean, like Hillary, you write in the book, was very difficult, very cold, you wrote in interviews, as opposed to Bill, who could be charming and angry at the same time, almost.
They both were mendacious throughout the process. So their integrity, I think, has justly been called into question at the political level. But at the legal level, which was my level, there was a failure to be forthcoming. But they were very lucky about Madison Guarantee Savings and Loan and the fraud that infected the complex loan that benefited them. And that is, there were many missing documents, and then we had missing witnesses. Jim McDougal died in prison. He said, and he wrote a book published posthumously, that President Clinton had committed perjury in his trial testimony in that trial of Jim Guy Tucker and the two McDougals and so forth. But Jim McDougal was dead. Susan McDougal went into criminal contempt. And then there were a lot of missing records because Madison Guarantee had a very systematic shredding machine. And those are pre-electronic days.
The Whitewater, then we get into Paula Jones. And then we get into Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
And then it descends into a much different story. The Paula Jones case, President Clinton, as you wrote, made a mistake as far as he, in your view, should have just settled this case and he would have had none of this.
The nation would have been spared if the president, who obviously has such robust, boundless self-confidence in his abilities to sell, right? To make people believe that which is simply not true. So, of course, the usual approach, vilify, attack, straight from Saul Alinsky, vilify the other side. This has been Hillary's modus operandi because she worshipped at the feet of Saul Alinsky and his rules for radicals. I think the American people, now that her career politically is over, may she contribute to the public good now, failed to really focus on the fact that Hillary Clinton was motivated by rules for radicals. That should be a warning sign in terms of the individual's character. So in any event, Paula Corbin Jones brings her lawsuit. The president refused to apologize and so forth. Now, what was the lawsuit? It was about sexual harassment.
Right.
We hear a lot about that. And we said, we're going to take that seriously. The head of CBS loses his job. Anchors at NBC lose their jobs.
Well, the Charlie Me Too Rose. Movement's in full force.
Right. And so it was a very different era. Our society is different now, 20 years later. And in many respects, it's a better society. It's a more humane society and takes issues of human dignity of all persons much more seriously. Not that we didn't take it seriously, but it's a matter of degree. So in any event, Paula Corbin Jones files a lawsuit, and the President of the United States hires these very expensive lawyers. He complained about all these legal fees. And guess what? He should have settled the case. He takes the issue all the way up to to the Supreme Court, loses 9-0. Two of his own appointees voted against him. And what was he saying? I'm immune. I'm immune from suit.
Yeah.
From throughout. So does this sound like echoes? We're hearing echoes, aren't we? I am immune from suit throughout my presidency, which was a claim that had never been advanced in the history of the American people.
So where does Monica Lewinsky fit into all of this? Well, the White House intern's relationship with the president from 1995 to 1997 first surfaced in the Jones case. And Lewinsky at first denied it in an affidavit, lying to Jones's lawyers after they subpoenaed her to testify.
Unfortunately, she had confided in Linda Tripp that she had had a sexual, and there was no question, there was a very deep friendship relationship between the president and Monica. And she, Monica, wanted Linda Tripp to lie. We knew Linda Tripp, and so here's the connection. Not even 6 degrees of separation were necessary. We, in the investigation, knew Linda Tripp because she was the last person in the White House who we know to have seen Vince Foster alive. She was his executive assistant.
Wow.
Amazing.
So many layers.
And so then she, Linda Tripp, begins working at the Pentagon. So she leaves the White House. So too, Monica Lewinsky is sort of shuttled out of the White House, get her away from the president. That was Hillary's doing through one of her staff members named Evelyn Lieberman. Anyway, so off both of them go to the Pentagon and the Public Affairs Office. There they became fast friends. And Linda, having had all this very sensitive information, was now being urged by Monica Lewinsky, do what I did, commit perjury. And Linda was unwilling to do that.
Bill Clinton lied under oath, correct?
Correct. He lied under oath, both in his civil deposition and then eventually over the advice of his own party leaders, he lied before the grand jury on August 17, 1998, a day I will remember forever and a day, frankly, that lives on in infamy.
Is this the definition of is?
Exactly. And I recount that day in some detail because I think it's very important to understand the depth of the mendacious character, but the slippery character of Bill Clinton, who had – it's an American tragedy. He had so many gifts, so many talents, so relational, so smart. And yet, look at now, part of his legacy, even though he's popular, I understand all that, but part of his legacy, as a matter of law, is contempt. The only president of the United States ever to have been found in contempt by a federal district judge. And by the way, he did not appeal that. He just accepted it.
The Starr report. I guess the term these days they would say it broke the internet. Comes out. It's the House releases it, right? The entire thing online. And all the details, salacious. And then you've been attacked in the media a lot as a partisan. People were calling you a pervert. You cared nothing about the law. You just were fascinated by President Clinton's sex life. Did the Starr report going online hurt?
Absolutely. And we in the investigation were taken aback because when we transmitted the report, which was required under the statute under which I was operating, we made it very clear that this had very sensitive information. And nonetheless, without having reviewed a single word, sight unseen, again, for the first time in American history, the House of Representatives voted pretty overwhelmingly. Happily, there were some nay votes. Some wiser heads were saying, well, we need to see what's in the report.
Right.
But they didn't. They just put it on the internet with no redactions and the like.
Tomorrow, you'll learn something new about Hillary Clinton in our podcast. An attempt years ago to lock her up.
This, by the way, has never been told before.
This is Kat Timpf with your Fox News commentary. Coming up,
Todd Crawford founded the Lisa Colagrassi Foundation, named after his late wife, a well-known and respected ABC television news reporter at the station in New York. She suffered a fatal brain aneurysm while on the job in 2015. Lisa had been covering a story and was stricken while riding in the news van.
and passed away at the age of 49 years old. Her unexpected death prompted Todd to make the affliction that took his wife's life a personal cause. And now he spreads the word about brain aneurysms to the public and through his work at the Lisa Colagrassi Foundation.
A brain aneurysm basically is a weakening of one of the walls of a blood vessel inside the brain. So if you can picture a straw that you drink from, that is what a normal blood vessel looks like. A blood vessel, when the weakening wall occurs because of the pressure of the blood that hits directly against that weakened area, causes the blood vessel to bubble outward, much like you often see on a bike tire or a car tire.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And over time, that becomes very susceptible and prone to rupturing or bursting. And then when that happens, all kinds of bad things happen, and they are highly, highly fatal and debilitating.
Can they be detected?
Yes. So there's if you're scanned, most brain aneurysms go undetected, and the way that most of them are discovered, because there's no screening protocol in place in this country right now, or guidelines, that they're incidentally detected. You go in for an MRI for some other reason and image the brain, and they come back and say, oh, by the way, you have a brain aneurysm. So they can be, if you're screened, and the best screening method is a MRA, which is a form of an MRI, can easily pick up the brain aneurysm in the brain.
How come there's no screening for brain aneurysms? I mean, you go and they do everything.
Yeah.
You know, prostate, every type of condition that they have some screening protocol.
Well, I think there are a couple issues that directly go to the heart of that question, one of which is that this is a industry and a condition that has not been branded or marketed properly over the last 25, 30 years. That's number one. Secondly, nobody has ever attempted to have start a conversation with the health insurers about the magnitude of the problem, which is exactly one of the things that we will be doing very shortly here. So those are just two of the many problems that this industry and condition faces.
What is that conversation that you would want to have?
Well, I think it's a couple things from the standpoint that, first of all, that there is a family hereditary component to this. So we don't want to ask the health insurers to screen the entire world. We would like them to consider beginning with those who have a first-generation family incident or connection. So if you've had somebody who's had one or two family members who have experienced a brain aneurysm in your family, the rest of the family members should be screened. And so that's the starter conversation. There's some other things that we have an interest in that, I don't want to necessarily reveal right now, because I don't want to blindside the health insurers when we sit down with them. But suffice it to say that, it's going to be an important conversation and dialogue that we have.
You have a list of things specifically, and that's great. And you mentioned hereditary and family members. We have a connection, as you know.
Right.
My mother died of a brain aneurysm suddenly, just like Lisa had. Both the same age. She was 49 years old. I was 14 years old. This was on December 30th, 1971. And we'll talk more about that in a moment. But first of all, some of the numbers. 30,000 people suffer aneurysms. 6 million, according to the statistics, about walking around.
That's low.
So that's their other.
Those numbers are wrong. So, again, the best that we have been given is a range, okay, from the NIH. And that range is that as many as somewhere between 2 and 5% of the U.S. population will develop a brain aneurysm in their lifetime.
Wow.
So if you take the upper level, 5%, that is the equivalent of 15 million or 16 million people in this country, which is roughly one out of every 20 people will develop a brain aneurysm. If you dig beneath the numbers a little bit more, women in particular are 50% more at risk, particularly if they're between the ages of 40 and 55. So I think, given the statistics of a number of women in that age range in this country, if you do the math, it's somewhere between one out of every six women between the ages of 40 and 55 will develop a brain aneurysm in this country.
That is such a big number, and this is so common, yet it certainly is not being addressed sufficiently.
Not at all. And you mentioned the amount of the number of ruptures per year. That number, ranges anywhere between 30. Some think it could be as high as 60. 1,000 ruptures a year. What we know is that, you know, of the number of ruptures, regardless, they're highly fatal and debilitating. Over 75% of those who experience a rupture, like your mom, like my wife, Lisa, will never make it, will either pass away or they are significantly impaired for the remainder of their life.
I was a kid. I had no idea my mom had any other preconditions. I don't know if she suffered headaches. I don't remember any of that. She was an actress, soap opera actress, Search for Tomorrow. It was the morning of December 27th, 2 days after Christmas. She wakes up in bed and says to my dad, her husband, of course, says, "Oh, I have this terrible headache." Just what you just described.
Right.
She said, "I have a real, what a headache." And she plopped back in the pillow unconscious. I was not in my room. My grandmother was staying in my room, visiting from California. I was in another room, and I heard, I came in, and I saw her, and my father said, "Mom's sick, go back to bed, we've called the ambulance." And I heard the ambulance, I heard the commotion, I was scared to death. She died 3 days later in the hospital. It changes your life forever. But in her case, it is so searing and so stunning, because unlike cancer, not to put those down in any way, but any other lingering illness, you have no preparation. Life is normal, and suddenly it changes in the most horrible way, suddenly. And you have two young boys. One is 14, one's right, just off to college, same age that I was when this happened. And it is just so damn cruel.
Yeah. It strips everything from you. And for us, we had a somewhat similar story. I mean, you always remember, kind of like 9/11, where you were and what you were doing. And so the night before Lisa, before her brain aneurysm rupture, we were all huddled around the kitchen table having dinner. And it was the night before March Madness NCAA basketball tournament kicked off. And so we were preparing our brackets and, you know, jabbing one another about whose bracket was going to be busted first. And she went to West Virginia, and she picked West Virginia and win it all. And we all said, "Oh, Mom, you're going to be out early." And, well, she, you know, went to work, and the next day came. And, you know, we had talked about getting together at the when she got home from work to huddle around the TV and have game day like food. And I got the call, you know, around 9 o'clock in the morning coming back from a business meeting from one of the top neurosurgeons in this country here in New York City. And instantly I knew that our life had changed forever, and everything kind of, for me at that time, kicked into slow motion. So I'll never forget. And it is very, very different from most other conditions, you know, like you described. There's no time to prepare. There's no time to say goodbye. And, you know, because of that, and, you know, we'll never have Lisa around for any of the boys' milestones. Like, you didn't have your mom around for those milestones. And it's, I think the wounds for something like this are permanent.
She was in the news van coming back from a story, and,
right,
and that's when it ruptured.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about the symptoms, I mean, for 3 days prior to her rupture, she was experiencing these major coughing spells, like almost like water was going down the wrong windpipe, and for no reason at all. And the morning of the fire that she was covering, she experienced one of those horrific coughing spells. Was so bad, in fact, that they had to cut away from her live shot and go to another news segment. And she climbed in the news van and was on the way back to the station, was kind of resting her head, because obviously she had her eyes closed and was experiencing that worst headache of life. And that's how she dealt with it. And it ruptured, and she slumped in the seat of the news van and went into cardiac arrest. And if she hadn't been brought back, you know, to life after 11 or 12 minutes, frankly, her cause of death probably would have been attributed to heart failure. And so you're right. There's a lot of misdiagnosis or a lot of, other things that are attributed to cause of death, when in fact it is really the brain aneurysm and the rupture that occurs at first that triggers those other things.
Finally, tell me about the Lisa Foundation work. what the foundation does and what you want people to know.
So the foundation is, we've quickly emerged as the nation's leader in raising awareness and educating the public about brain aneurysms. We just, for example, launched earlier this week a national awareness campaign, and at the very heart of that campaign is a public service announcement featuring Whoopi Goldberg. And we chose to work with Whoopi, and she's been terrific because Whoopi paid tribute to Lisa on The View the morning after Lisa passed away, and just 6 weeks later, Whoopi's own brother died the exact same way. So we think she's such an iconic figure and such a recognizable name that she'll help us gain share of voice and kind of break through the clutter and grab people's attention. We've also been credited with saving a number of lives in both the U.S. and abroad over the last 3 years, which is very gratifying. We are also involved to a limited extent, but we'll be getting in this space in a much bigger way with support groups for brain aneurysm survivors around the country. Most of our support groups right now are in the tri-state New York City area. As of today, over 95 cents of every dollar that we receive goes directly to fund our life-saving national awareness and education programs. And, you know, Fox viewers and listeners are some of the most philanthropic in the country. We would ask for their help and support in any way that they can. Dig as deep as you can and help fund some of our programs that are just sitting on the shelf waiting to be funded, because when you do so, you will be helping save a life and supporting life, which is, you know, what we're all about.
Todd, it certainly is underserved. It is not recognized enough by the professional and medical community. And for those of us like us, we share a special bond because of what we've gone through. And I want to thank you for what you're doing, for keeping Lisa's memory and spirit alive. It's so important, and I want to tell everyone listening, it's the LisaFoundation.org. It's got information. If you can help, you can save a life in Lisa's name, and I really deeply thank you for coming in, and this will certainly bring a lot of attention to this issue.
My pleasure. Thanks, Eric.
Todd, thanks, of course.
It's a brand new podcast based on the brand new book from Fox News political editor Chris Steigerwald, Every Man a King.
A short, colorful history of American populists. It's funny, informative, and useful, I think.
Find it now on Apple Podcasts.
Here's a look at the week ahead.
Monday. The biggest names in television will hit the red carpet for the 70th annual Emmy Awards ceremony. Drama series Game of Thrones led the way with 22 total nominations.
Tuesday. The beginning of Yom Kippur, regarded as the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. Millions of worshippers will be taking part in Jewish traditions, including a day-long fast.
Wednesday.
The woman convicted of aiding in the 2002 kidnapping of Elizabeth Smart will be released from prison. 72-year-old Wanda Barzi will remain under federal supervision for 5 years following her release.
Saturday.
Oktoberfest kicks off Saturday in Munich, Germany. The world's largest beer festival will span for 2 weeks before concluding on October 7th. And that's a look at the week ahead. I'm Chris DeMeo, Fox News.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Cat Tim.
What's on your mind?
A woman from Wilmette, Illinois, found herself under investigation because her 8-year-old daughter was spotted walking her dog around the block by herself. According to an article in the Chicago Tribune, the police showed up at Corey Wyden's door after an anonymous caller contacted them to report that the girl had been walking alone. Although no charges were filed, Wyden was investigated by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services over concerns that the walk meant that her daughter might be being neglected. Quote, "For something like this to happen to me, there's something really wrong," Wyden said. "The funny thing is, I'm a joke with my friends because my kids are around me all the time." Wyden also told the Chicago Tribune that she can actually see most of her daughter's route through her windows at home, so it wasn't like she wasn't keeping an eye on her. It might sound ridiculous, but this is far from the first time that something like this has happened. As the Chicago Tribune notes, many other parents have had the police called on them from seemingly innocuous things, such as leaving their children in the car for a few minutes on a cool day or allowing them to play in parks alone. Wyden was eventually cleared, as she should have been, but these kinds of investigations should not be happening in the first place. They are, for one thing, very strenuous. According to an article in Reason, a lot had to be done before Wyden was able to be cleared. Investigators had to talk to everyone from her children to her other family members to her pediatrician, which is a total waste of not only their time, but also of government resources. After all, there was absolutely no way that this case would have ever met the legal definition of neglect, which requires that the parent display, quote, blatant disregard for the child's safety. There's no way that a mother allowing her own child to walk around alone in her own neighborhood along a route where she was mostly visible would have ever met this definition. It's a very normal and very healthy thing for children to be allowed to have some independence. When I was a kid, I used to walk around the block by myself all the time. Sometimes I'd even ride my bike further than that, and I still very much managed to not die. All my friends did the same thing, and they're still alive too. Looking back, I'm very grateful that I was given the opportunity to exercise a small amount of self-reliance by having the freedom to roam my own neighborhood alone. It's obviously important to keep a watchful eye on your children, but I also believe it should generally be up to the parents to decide the levels of independence that their own children can handle. Believe it or not, most parents actually know their own children's capabilities better than the police or government officials do. No child should be neglected, and it's very important that we do have services to investigate and stop any instances where that is actually happening. The thing is, though, we also shouldn't be clogging up those services with needless calls like the one that was made on Wyden. I'm Kat Timp.
You have been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to Fox News Radio's hourly newscast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, visit foxnews.com.